You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You are listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek, The Next Generation, and tonight's episode is Gambit Part 2. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
And I'm James from London.
James from London. Hey, I know that you absolutely positively love Star Trek Voyager.
Yes.
And even though you want to skip Star Trek Deep Space Nine and go straight into Star Trek Voyager for review, you know, yeah, that we're not going to do because it just makes no sense. But I did find something since the last time we've talked. And I had no idea that it was being created. You know, okay. You've heard of the Delta Quadrant podcast?
I have.
I've heard of, there was another podcast, I'll be damned if I can remember what they were, but basically they were, all those podcasts about Star Trek Voyager were fans watching Star Trek Voyager and doing a review. Sounds like something we do. Well, I found a Star Trek Voyager podcast that really beats any podcast out there. And first of all, before I go on, it looks like my waveform is really low. Can you barely hear me?
No, I can hear you. I can hear you.
Okay, good. Because when I look at my computer, the waveform is only pegging up 2. And for the Blue Yeti, that seems weird. But anyway, as long as you're hearing me, they're hearing me. However, this new podcast is actually being done by Garrett Wong and Robbie Duncan McNeil. And it's called...
Okay. That sounds awesome.
It's called the Delta Flyers. And so they are currently doing Star Trek Voyager in production run. And it's better than just reviewing what they think it is. They're telling us about what happened in the show while they were making it. So this has really been fascinating. There is a review podcast they do, audio. It's basically just the review. That's it. And then for Patreon members, which I had to become, because if I'm going to be a Star Trek podcaster, I need to watch these whole videos. That's when they do other bonuses, like what do they remember of the show? And then they go and watch the show. And it's funny. McNeil's like, nope, I don't remember anything. Tom Paris doesn't remember anything. Or what he does doesn't jive with what the real video is. But Garrett, on the other hand, I mean, Garrett's like a walking encyclopedia of Star Trek. Okay, so he's pretty damn good at what he does on his side. So they talk about what do we remember, and then they watch the video or they watch the show, take notes, and then they come back and talk about it. And one thing Tom Paris' character hated was, if you remember the gigolo at Sandrine's as he was hitting on Janeway.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then there was another guy who was hitting on Torres. You know, he said, you know, the secret is treat a lady like a tramp and a tramp like a lady works every time. And she's like, Tom, did you create this guy? He's a pig. And so are you. Remember that?
I do. Yep.
And then Tom says, this is Ricky. I include her in all my programs, which is not true because we never see her as in the Captain Proton. But, you know, what Robbie said makes sense. He really was a pig. I mean, it's just creepy the way these things come out, especially when he says, I'm just hustling the Indian. So, he's like really pissed that he actually came up with these, that he actually had to do these things when he was acting. So it's a very good thing. And then they once in a while, they interview other people. They've had Bob Picardo. They've had Robert Beltran. I think they've had Kate Mulgrew. So it's really interesting. They come on. They talk like if the Doctor did something phenomenal on the show, they'll bring Bob Picardo on and he'll talk about it and give his opinion. Mm-hmm. So it's a very interesting podcast, and I have been watching them one by one by one. I'm only up to, I think, 110, right? Season 1, episode 10. I don't quite remember what that is. But they're already on season 2, episode 17, that they have coming out soon. So I got a little bit to catch up. But I thought, I'm going to put that out there on our show because we are Star Trek. And when it comes to a podcast that's really damn good, who beats the actors that actually played it?
No, I'm actually just looking it up now. What level did you join on the Patreon? Because you can join all the way up to the Admiral level.
Oh, my God.
Looks like over $1,000 a month. A year, sorry. $1,000 a year.
Yeah, I was going to say, they have one that's $150 a month. No, I'm not going to do any of that. I don't need that kind of bonus material where they talk about every time they took a dump on set. that I really don't care about.
Ooh, you get a 60-minute Zoom call with Tom and Harry.
Every month?
Every month.
Yeah, well, then. Okay. You sign up for that. Tell me what it's like. sorry, guys. I am friends with Garrett on Facebook for the
Are
show.
You?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah, that was from through Dragon Con when we went there a few years ago, even before we went to Star Trek Las Vegas. So, but, it's not like him and I talk or hang out or anything. So maybe he listens to the show. I doubt it. So, sorry, guys, that's not a membership level I could achieve. But basically, I just do the $5 one a month so I can get the all the bonus stuff in the review.
Mm-hmm.
So.
You're an ensign.
Yes, ensign. And I'll probably, I'm sorry, Garrett, I'm going to stay an ensign just like Harry did.
Maybe they should have made the ensign level like the highest level, the most, the most... Yeah, with the most perks, because clearly anyone that's an ensign is clearly awesome.
Yeah. So, okay. But yeah, so far I'm enjoying that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, anything else going on with you?
Oh, no, nothing at all. Nearly coming up to Christmas, need to go shopping. Or probably more accurately, need to order things from online to have them drop off at my house.
Definitely. Yeah. I've been off of work the last week. I went in for my Uber inspection. I do it every year. They have to inspect the car, make sure that it's suitable for driving people around. And I had no idea my tires are so thin. I look at them, they look fine to me, but I'm going to have to get that penny out and do that little Washington's head thing. Or who's on the penny? I think it's Washington. Put the head in there, and if the head's still, you could still... if you don't see the head anymore, your tires are fine. If you do, they're bad. Well, they're balding, and all four of them. And my left lower ball joint is coming out of socket, I guess you could say. So when you wiggle the tire...
Oh, we're talking about the car. Excellent.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
I was definitely worried for you for a second.
Yeah, I'm not sure my body ball joint... Well, I know the... Anyway, so basically what happens is you can wiggle the tire. And that's a bad thing, because if you can wiggle the tire, well, then the wheel could fall off. So let's say I'm driving down the interstate at 60 miles an hour, and the tire falls off, the wheel falls off. Oh, what do I become, a trampoline, or, a tripod? Do I flip forward? Do I flip side or forward and side? And then who hits me at 60 miles an hour? So, yeah, my luck would be a... semi truck back there. Boom. Okay, we're done. So I have to get it fixed. And I couldn't get it in till tomorrow. So I've had nothing to do the whole week except for watch TV. it's rough, I tell you. But so tomorrow. And also there are things on the end of the tie rod, which connects to the steering wheel. Okay, so when you're turning, the tie rod turns your wheels left and right. Well, there's the tie rod end that goes to the wheel. Those were bad as well. So I went on YouTube and said, replace tie rod and 2013 Kia Soul. Watched about a 5-minute video and said, geez, what do they want $300 for that? I could do that myself. So I did. My father-in-law works at Napa Auto Parts. He got me the parts. I put them on myself. They work fine. The only problem is they're not on right, because obviously I don't have an alignment machine to align my front suspension and steering. So tomorrow I get the new ball joint put on, because that's a little more work and I'm not screwing with that. And it's cheaper too. It's a lot more work, but it's cheaper. I don't get it. So they're going to put a new ball joint on. Then I have to go get 4 new tires and then take it to Firestone to get an alignment, which I have a lifetime alignment plan. So that's that part at least is free. And then I can continue driving. But no, I didn't want to take a chance. Not even to deliver food to people, which would have been my own risk. It's just not worth it. Have you ever been driving down the road, or you're on the bus or the train or anybody, anything, and you see a car, that tire fell off the car and it's just sitting there?
No, but, earlier this year, my wife had a blowout on our car. Mm-hmm. And so I had to replace 4 tires on that. Okay. And she said that she didn't even notice the difference. So she was driving down the motorway at 70 miles an hour with the kids in the car. And she said that she couldn't feel any difference with only 3 of the tires actually being, you know, full of air.
Oh, my God. You should severely knock on wood. There are fatalities that occur on a blowout because people, you know, like, poof, and all of a sudden the wheel goes crazy. They try to overcompensate. They spin it into a stall, which then flips the car over one after the other after the other. So she
said she didn't notice.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. She is lucky. My God. Has she gone out yet and got some lottery tickets?
hey, she won the lottery when she married me.
Well, yes, but yeah. This one comes with money. We'll leave it at that. Yeah, right. Yeah, send that girl out for lottery tickets quickly. Just make sure her tires are okay first. No, seriously. It's a good thing that she and the kids are good. People do flip their cars like crazy on a tire blowout. And like I said, you're flipping your car, you're laying in the middle of the road when a semi just can't stop in time. Okay. So that is that. I'll get it fixed tomorrow and I'll get back to work Tuesday morning. What else? I don't think anything else is going on.
Well, it's a good thing we have a podcast to do then.
Yes, I think we should. All right. So tonight's episode, once again, was Gambit Part 2. This is the 5th episode of Star Trek The Next Generation Season 7, continuing from Gambit Part 1. It was first aired on October 18th, 1993. Teleplay by Ronald D. Moore. Story by Naren Shankar. And directed by Alexander Singer. Guest stars for this episode include Richard Lynch as Arcus Baron, Robin Curtis as Talera, T'Pol, Talera, whatever, whoever she is. And I even have a note in here saying how many damn T'Pols are there in Vulcan. But anyway, Caitlin Brown as Vakor, Cameron Thor as Narek, James Worthy as Corral, and Sabrina LeBeouf as, I don't know, Jutsi, and co-starring Martin Gosselins as C-Talk. And here, the voice of the computer is not there. However, we do have Majel Barrett as the narrator of the story.
Yeah, last time on Star Trek Next Generation. I think that's her only input.
Uh-huh. How much did you think she made for that?
Well, don't you guys have minimum wage that you need to pay people appearing or doing voice work? So don't you guys have union rates? I imagine it's that.
Yeah, that could be. Or Rod wasn't going to be happy that night in bed because he didn't pay her. Not Rod, Gene. Make it Gene. Oh, shit. Not Rod, her son, guys. I'm not going there. Oh, God, how do I take that one back? Oh, this is sad because I don't know where I'm at in this episode, and I almost feel like I need to edit that out. But I won't. Okay, yeah. So Jean won't like what happens with him tonight if he didn't pay her enough for that narration. Or actually, Jean was dead by now. What am I saying?
He was, my friend, yeah.
Okay, guys, if you hear that any of that stuff, you know Lou is one lazy bastard. Otherwise, I need to take all that out. So what do we think about this episode? My initial thoughts are this is a better story than the first one, okay? It's a game of who can you trust? Who's the good guy? Who's the bad guy? Well, we know who the two bad guys are on this mercenary, or the good guys who are playing bad guys on this mercenary ship. But the rest, who's who? We don't know. You know, and as I watched this, it's actually started to come back to me a little bit. As I said, I was pretty, I really didn't know much about this episode. But yeah, it started to come back. Wrecker and Picard, you know, they handle the situation pretty damn good. Picard ends up getting some much-needed rest in the end, and Wrecker is put on ice. That data. That's funny. So what about you, James?
Okay, I think the second part is not as good as the first part. I thought that there were some things that were quite obvious. That, I mean, I think we had some problems from the first episode that can, like, you know, leech into the second episode, and it kind of just goes a bit but it's, you know, there are some fun parts, right? Riker being arrested at the end and put into the brig, and the, you know, the very tall Klingon that can't talk, he's fun and tall.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny when you see him standing next to Worf and you think Worf is pretty tall.
Oh, man.
He's like at least a foot to 2 feet over him. Well.
He must be what? He must be a basketball player, right? That guy?
That has to have been. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to get any words out of him. He seemed pretty well sedated. I don't know if Riker or if Troy could have gotten anything out of him either. You know, I sense that you are. Yeah, hell with it. Okay, so, previously on the battle bridge, Captain Picard has been killed in a bar fight. I mean, vaporized. Will is going to take the Enterprise and claim the right of vengeance, which Starfleet says, nah, I don't think so. Well, I'm sorry, Admiral. What I meant to say was, I really would like to investigate Picard's death. I think, you know, we owe it to him. To which he then says, okay, that's better. Do what you want to do. Starfleet out. On a planet, the away team is attacked. One nameless person is dead. Will Wrecker is kidnapped and brought on this mercenary ship, where he comes across several outlaws, including one who has a very familiar voice, a very familiar balding hair pattern, and a very familiar look of one Captain Picard. Interesting. Who suggests that they kill Will quickly because he's a bad guy. But then they set up Will to be the hero of the ship. And since Will is out of sorts with Starfleet, they can trust him. Sort of. So, he gets on the good side of the mercenary captain who believes Will's just a rogue Starfleet officer, works like a charm. However, when Will isn't able to get an outpost to lower its shields or get the Enterprise to lower their shields, he tries to use what knowledge he has of his command codes, which obviously were changed. Did you know that? I mean, do you think it's standard policy that if a first officer is abducted, you know, they instantly change the command codes? So the captain's not there. The first officer's not there. So the second officer is able to get rid of the command codes? Or do you think Starfleet has to, like, you know, Skype in and or team viewer into the computer and change it for them?
No. Look, there's someone on the Enterprise that is basically in charge of the network and the passwords, and he has the ultimate admin access, and he's the guy with the power. So it's exactly the same as at work. You know, there'll be Steve, the admin guy. He'll be sitting in engineering, or he'll be main in 10-4 most days, and he's the guy that you need to ask to offboard or onboard new people.
Can you imagine that one day he's sitting in 10-4 and all of a sudden he beams out onto the mercenary ship where Wrecker says, "See that guy right there? He's the one that's got all the power on the ship to change anybody's command codes. He's the one that we need." Ooh, I don't know. Imagine then also a Romulan trying to get that Steve. I don't know if I want that much power or knowledge in my head. He's a prime target. So anyway, so he hacks in, tries to use his command code, makes him think that everything's working just fine. But of course, the Enterprise scrubbed it. Steve was on top of it. So they fire on the Enterprise. No damage at all. Why not? Well, because, you know, they programmed it not to. But they need to play along. I think Data, like I said last time, I'm surprised that the computer actually thought of this. Hey, there's a reason why they're not causing any damage here. Maybe we need to play along. I wouldn't have thought a computer to come up with that. But he did.
Yep.
So they return fire. And now the conclusion. And I still didn't make anywhere near what Magil did. Okay. So once again, and I didn't remember this part because I kept going with the notes. I kept saying, here we go. Once again, Worf is spending way too much time arguing with his commanding officer on the ship. At what point does Data take him into the ready room and tell him either follow his orders without talk back or today might be a good day to die?
Yeah, I mean, I like the way that Data reprimands Worf.
Yes!
Data's the man in this episode, and Worf is just being whiny.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And since, you know, a Klingon warrior, you can't, like, send him to his quarters to sit and, you know, put his nose in the corner. So, you know, Mr. Worf, either follow my orders or I will kill you. I mean, Worf would have been like...
He didn't say that.
No, of course not. But what if he did? Worf would have been like, well, okay, that's more like it. But no, I will put you back in tactical and I will bring Geordi up here if you don't stop it, okay? Go away. Mr. Worf, I hope we could still be friends. Can we?
yeah, just keep that damn cat away from me.
Oh, I forgot. I forgot something.
Gone?
So what's happening with us lately thing. A couple months, 2-3 months ago, my daughter, who was 18 at the time, moves out. She wants to go live with her friend at her apartment. And while she's there, she adopts a cat. And of course, as you could see what's coming, an 18-year-old on her own, because she just wants to be on her own, isn't enough, so she comes back. Guess who's got a cat now?
I imagine you have a cat.
I have a cat now.
I'm not a big cat person, but you have dogs, right? Dogs surely don't like cats.
I have 3 dogs in, you know, various ages. I have my toy chihuahua, who's about 16 years old, has no teeth. None. Not one. Okay, the dog was abused. And now he loves his life. He's happy, and he just wants to lay on his daddy's chest and give him kisses all day long. So then we have another one who's a border collie, half border collie, 1/4 the rat terrier, 1/4 what's called Feist, and I've never heard of that before. But she's a beautiful, beautiful dog. She's mild-mannered, even-tempered, but she's afraid of everything. And when I just said, oh, wait, I just thought of something, she would have jumped up and ran out of the room. So I don't know how badly she was abused. And then we have Candy. The first one is Squirrel. The second one is Rosie. And then we have Candy, who is a half Chihuahua, half Rat Terrier, and she's a big girl. She's a husky girl. Or she's big boned or whatever. Full-figured woman. But she does, you know, she's feisty. So the cat's actually afraid of her. But the cat now is starting to bully Squirrel. Because he can't defend himself. All he can do is growl or bark, but he can't bite her. He can't do anything. So that's got me a little concerned that she's... And I even try to stop her when she wants to go after him. That's one thing about a cat. When they want to do something, they don't really give a crap whether you like it or not. Whereas a dog, if they were about to do something and you try and stop them, they'll stop instantly. The cat, no. As I'm trying to kick her away from him, she's still going after him. So that worries me. Anyway.
So that there's a famous quote that I believe is attributed to Winston Churchill, which I always like to use in these situations, which is that a cat looks down on you, mm-hmm. a dog looks up at you,
yep.
and a pig looks you straight in the eye and treats you like an equal.
Really? That's funny. Oh, my God. All right. So anyway, yeah. Can we still be friends?
Sure, why not?
And it's pretty good because later on, what do we have when Data gives an order and Worf is just about ready?
Wait a minute. Oh, yeah. Okay, that we should do.
Yeah. Can we bring him aboard and search his ship? No, we can't. However,
that's a long way down the line.
I know, but still. However, it's funny that Data then comes up with the plan. But we'll get there. You're right. All right. So Baran wants Riker to get in close with Galen. Get close to him, find out who my enemies are, and then when we get the second artifact, kill him. Which, by the way, they found the first artifact that he was searching for. 98% match. But now we need the second one. When you find it, confused, kill him.
How many artifacts were there? Two or three?
Three.
They already had one? They were searching for the second and the Klingon had the third? Is that it?
Yes, exactly. Okay. The first one was on Vulcan in a cave. They love their caves. And the second one, that's when Galen found the second one in the vault. The Klingon, the sedate Klingon, had the third one.
Okay, understood.
Good. So they want them to get close, and Riker playing along, like, you know, hey, as long as we get profit, whatever, I don't care. So. Is it okay? It seemed like to me Riker and Galen didn't have enough conflict that Baran would have looked at these two humans that have joined his ship in the last month or so and not go, where are these people coming from? Do you think so? I find it hard to believe that even Picard could have gotten on his ship as Galen only to get Riker. And now we have two humans on my ship. Am I wrong?
No, I said this last week. I think that, this week we do see other members of the crew. Uh-huh. So it's not just like the four guys on the bridge. But I did mention that, you know, 2 weeks ago we had no humans. Now we've got two of them. And, you know, we're going to be picking up more as it goes along.
Yeah. And it just so happens these two humans really don't like each other for some reason. Well, I don't see the two guys with the hole in their foreheads arguing with somebody else. So why are these two guys always plucking at each other?
Okay, so the thing that I was going to mention on that is whenever I go away on holiday abroad, there's this Brits abroad issue. You know, I don't like Brits abroad. I don't want to deal with them. So maybe it's the similar thing here. When humans run into other humans in the galaxy, it's like, oh, dear, you're an embarrassment, guy. Yeah, just stay out of my way.
So if you go somewhere and let's say Las Vegas this year, and you walk across someone and say hello, and they have an English accent, you say, "Ah, crikey," and turn around and walk away.
Oh, absolutely. English people do not want to meet English people on holiday.
Really?
No way.
Oh my God, that's funny. Kind of like dogs that don't want to be around each other.
Do you not have that in the US? Do you like, you know, stumbling across other fellow United Statians whilst you know, whilst in the middle of nowhere in Peru or something?
Well, that's true. You know, actually, we do. Because especially when I find out that they're from this area too, and you know, and I get to talk to somebody a million miles away about how that Dodge Street in Omaha goes one way, the center lane goes one way in the morning and the other way in the evening, and we're always getting head-on collisions because people are too stupid to know what time it's supposed to go which way. Yeah, it's kind of fun talking to people from this area on vacation about that. Yeah, we do. I don't know. Yeah, I've never seen a problem with it.
Okay, it must just be an English thing. And maybe it's just a James thing. Maybe everyone else is thinking, oh, you've been such a snob.
Well, there are people that think the English are snobs, but I don't think you are, James. All right. Well, there's you. We've got Colin. We've got Mark. Oh, hell, everybody I've talked to from over there seems pretty nice. Because we all like Star Trek. I suppose if they didn't, I wouldn't have anything in common, right?
It's a self-selection bias that's being introduced here.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, like I said, two dogs that can't pass each other without giving comments. So, all right. So when Riker tried to break in with his command codes, it turns out there was another secret transmission. And the fact that they got that information without Wesley Crusher being on board stuns me.
But Barry, what was the transmission? What would have been the message?
The coordinates to where they were going.
Oh yeah, okay. I suppose it was. Yeah, no, that's right.
So we got to go to Vulcan too, and they do. They go to Vulcan. So anyway. Worf, oh, like you said, okay, so before Worf gets his talking to, just as soon as Data says, set a course for Vulcan, and Worf goes, finally! Oh, man. But what, you know, Worf says, well, I see Commander questioning the captain about, you know, what he decides to do. No, you don't see that in public. You see that in private, but you don't see that in public. I can't believe Worf, who seems as proper as he always has been, to go, finally, and turns around.
Well, I think he's a little bit stressed out, right? And he's been showing it over the little period of time that he doesn't think that things are moving quickly enough. And, you know, there are a couple of things where he mentions that, if we don't pursue them, they're going to get away. And then Data's like, yep. That's
yeah,
right.
We know that.
If we don't pursue them, they will get away.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on. And I think Data's not exactly the most empathetic, right? No. To make sure that, you know, Worf's concerns are being taken into account and stuff like that.
Yes. Well, you know, I mean, what's Data to do? Well, you see, Worf, if we capture them, this story is over. And since Captain Picard, or no, they still think Picard's dead. But Commander Riker wants us to follow him so we could figure out what the real story is going on here. And for us to do that, we're going to let them think that we are out of commission and we can't follow them just yet. Does that help you, Mr. Worf? Good.
Wouldn't Picard have sent a message saying that he's alive and he's on the ship? You know, wouldn't that have been a good thing?
No, because what if the communication was, you know, the Vulcan / Romulan figured it out that there was coordinates there? What if she would have figured out that, oh, by the way, Captain Picard is actually alive. He's still with me and he's doing just fine. Again, it would, the story would have ended way too quickly.
Hmm. Okay, maybe.
Yeah. So how many T'Pols are there? Oh, and by the way, after Worf gets his talking to and he walks out of the door, did you notice what Data did? He did the shirt tuck as he tilted his head like, yeah, that's it. That's right.
Okay. I was about to say he did the Picard maneuver.
Yes, there you go. That's what it is, the Picard maneuver. Yes. Yeah. Because, you know, he's officially the Enterprise captain. I wonder... I was just thinking, you know, Data doesn't need to sleep. So do you think he'd be on the bridge 24 hours a day? Every shift that comes on sees him every single time, wearing the same uniform. He doesn't stink. He doesn't eat. He doesn't drink. He just sits there.
Okay, so I think it makes sense for that to be the case. But he's not always at ops, right? So he only does like his normal shift at ops. So right. It's not as if he hangs around when everyone else goes to bed.
No.
I mean, he does that night shit every now and again, but...
Right. But he does that because he's scheduled by somebody over him to do that. If there's nobody over him anymore, he may think, well, it's probably more efficient that I just stay right here on the bridge. They don't have to call me up here in an emergency. I don't need to go anywhere. I don't need to eat, drink, sleep. Well, you know, he is fully functional, but he doesn't do that either anymore. So, do you think he would, or do you think he would actually take time off and paint?
I think he'll take time off to paint. I think that's what he likes doing, right?
Okay, because I always thought he'd stay right there, and next thing you know, everybody has the cat jumping on the their console and walking across with its back hunched and his tail. That's another thing I don't like about cats. Well, the one thing that's impressive about cats that I've discovered. When a dog wags its tail, his whole tail wags at the same time. That's all he can do. His whole tail is in on the act. Where a cat can take just the very tip of the tail and swing it whatever way it wants. It can curl the tail in different ways and swing just the tip anytime it wants or how it wants or anything. So, in a sense, a cat's tail is more sophisticated than a dog's tail, it seems. But that's it. I'm sick of this cat. If this cat attacks my dog again, we are going to go at it. I'm telling you, we're going to go at it. Okay, where was I here? Oh, yeah. How many Vulcan T'Pols are there? So I used to think that.
Hasn't this one got a different spelling? Because I had subtitles on when I was watching it. So I think isn't it slightly different than normal? It's not a T'Pol, right?
Well, I'm kind of like, hey, I'm trying to go through it and see what she says with some subtitles.
But it's T'Pol, AAL, which is not T'Pol or T'Pol. So this is different. This is not the same. So I think we've had a T'Pol, POL, a T'Pol, PAU, and this one is a PAAL. So different. Although, I appreciate it's like, you know, six or seven different spellings for Elizabeth.
right. Oh, that's right. The video I have, I didn't do the subtitles, so I can't get it. Never mind. But yeah, so then I thought, wait a minute. Why couldn't there be more T'Pols? Maybe, you know, our Enterprise's T'Pol was very popular on Vulcan. Therefore, there's a lot of names after her. I'm sure there's a bunch of James Roberts. In fact, there's a guy with my name that goes to my doctor, and until they went digital, they would bring his file in once in a while. And I'd say, my, that's a thick file. And once in a while, they would ask me, so how's Wanda? Because you look on their spouse's Wanda, and I go, well, that depends. Who's Wanda? And they look down and go, oh, wait, it's the wrong one. Hold on. And they'll go get my file. So, yeah, there could be more T'Pols. How many Spocks do you think there are on Vulcan? Probably a Spock in every corner. Maybe not.
I'm not sure.
Maybe some names they can't do. So, but anyway, turns out the Romulans says she's not really Romulan at all. She's a Vulcan. And, what do you think of, what's her name? Robin Curtis, that's it. What do you think of Robin Curtis in this?
So, I find it really weird because she was in Search for Spock, right? Mm-hmm. Search for Spock was, 10 years previously? Mm-hmm. She looks too young. I don't know. I know that she's underneath makeup and stuff, but yeah. It just seemed odd that that someone from, I mean, maybe the other thing is that I consider the movies to be the original series, which they clearly weren't, right? Which we're talking about the mid-80s. But anyway, it's far enough in the future, yet it's a TOS kind of character, or a woman that plays a TOS character. That it just makes me a bit baffled. Bit surprised. Other than that, well, I'm not a big fan of the character, right? I still don't quite know whether she's a Romulan playing a Vulcan playing a Romulan, or a Romulan playing a Vulcan playing a Romulan playing a Vulcan playing a Romulan. So it's a little bit baffling. And when she was a Romulan, straight down the line Romulan, she also she used to wander around the place saying logical a lot. Which I kind of think is a bit of a giveaway that you might not be entirely what you what you're advertising. So I don't know. I mean, she's fine, not great, but not terrible. I'm not going to moan that much about it.
Well, I really didn't. I don't think I really realized as I was watching the first episode. The first part that I was looking at Robin Curtis. So to me, that was very strange. And it's what you told me at the time we were announcing who was who. And now all of a sudden, I can't get Savick out of my head. Now, whenever I watched her, I hear Savick.
Yeah. It's and you can see it in the face as well, in the jawline in particular.
Mm-hmm. Now you can. But who knew? Who knew? I didn't. But yeah. She definitely does seem a little bit different from the Search to the Gambit. But okay. But no, I still like her performance, of course. It's Banal who's an idiot on that ship. So the
there's pretty much 10 years between Search for Spock and when this would have been, between the filming of Search for Spock versus the filming of this episode.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, they're both on their way to Vulcan, but the Enterprise arrives there a little bit faster because, of course, they're faster. And I have to have the question about warp, and I don't think I've ever asked this kind of a question before. Couldn't the mercenary ship see the Enterprise as it passed him by? So if I'm driving down the road at, say, 70 miles an hour, and there's a crotch rocket that blasts past me at 150, I'm still going to see that motorcycle flying by. And it's just going to be very briefly, but then it's going to be gone.
But no, there's more than one way to get from one part of space to the other, right? Because space is three-dimensional, the chances that you come across anyone is going to be very remote.
Okay.
So it's a bit like when you're on a plane, right? So yeah. When you're in a plane, you very rarely see other planes outside the window.
Well, that's true. That's because there's only so many planes flying at the same time, but there's a billion cars you see driving along. But
no, there are a fair number of planes. It's just that when you go from the cars have to be on the road to the planes can be a lot more spread out because of the extra dimensions. But yeah, I don't think you're going to run into other spaceships.
Okay. But if they even had sensors, they wouldn't have seen this galaxy-class ship moving past them or even around them at that speed.
Wait, it's not clear to me that... it's not clear to me how... I don't think it could, because I think... sensors only work quite close by, right? So I think you can evade someone's from their their sensors. So you can give them a wide enough berth, I think.
Okay, because then I thought, well, let's say the mercenary ship is when you're at warp speed, are you actually in subspace?
No, I don't think so.
Okay,
it's not subspace.
Oh, okay, because they're bending space around them. Not they're bending them around space. So, okay, I just wasn't sure maybe if they were in two different subspace fields that, they could have actually went right past them using, the same space as them, but if they're in a different subspace, that's why they didn't crash into each other, I guess. I don't know. I don't know how warp really works, to be honest.
I don't think, I've never been particularly convinced by any of the explanations about warp.
Oh, yeah, it's probably never going to happen. Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, obviously, Gene needed warp speed to get anywhere, or else a 45-minute episode would have taken 3 days to explain, because, we're still going. Yeah, we're still there. We're still almost there. Just 14 more days to go. So, no, they needed it. So the Enterprise finds a Klingon shuttle with what appears to be heavily sedated Klingon on board. So Data begins to ask the Klingon questions. And I would say that the Klingon probably asserts his Fifth Amendment to the Constitution of the United States by hanging up on him. And does it seem like it's something that Federation people just don't understand when someone just... hangs up on him? Like, what the... Why would he do that?
I think, with this... I like the way that Data, he asks questions. He asks questions in a way that, you're being polite. That is, is it possible that we can inquire about where you're going? And it's like, no. And it's I like Data a lot because he's just so naive, right?
Definitely. I'm Data. What's your name?
No comment.
Oh, okay, no comment. Nice to meet you. I don't know, man. It just seems like they always get upset. Because sorry, I had to cough, I had to shut that down. They get upset because somebody hangs up on them. So what does Worf say? Well, we could do, if we wanted to, we could do a health and safety inspection on the Klingon shuttle.
So this seems out of character for Worf, right? It's like, does Worf, if they have like a Ferengi tactical officer, he might be looking for loopholes and things he can, he can scheme his way through. But for Worf, I would expect him to do, to be slightly more, gung-ho and, We'll jump on because we know he's lying.
Oh yeah, I lost you.
No, I'm still here.
Good.
I'm surprised that they still do have like health and safety inspectors, and the Worf would be aware enough that this is the way they would want to go through.
Right. Yeah. And even though Data says, Yeah, that's clearly crap there. Although...
Yeah, if he has a problem with it... Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I quite like that.
Yeah. Did you then look at Deanna's face?
Did she smile on this? What was that? I can't quite remember.
She looked at Data like, oh, you've got to be kidding. Yeah, yeah, you're sneaky. You know, she wouldn't expect, I don't think she would have expected that from Data. And she just looked at him like, oh, you are sneaky. And, mm-hmm. you know, so I thought that was pretty good. She did, you know, that was her contribution to the episode. She made about $2,000-$3,000 for it. Mm-hmm. So Dr. Crusher is there. Hello. I know that we just tractor beamed you into our shuttle bay and we're holding you against your will. And we're sorry about that. But, you know, we need to do a little bit of safety inspection on your ship. So if you would please just stand over all 15 feet of you, I'm going to go in there and take a look around your ship. Okay. Okay. And he walks, he moves out of her way. She walks in there and he stands next to Worf. And what do you think is on Worf's thought pattern right now as he looks up?
Well, it mainly seems to be, boy, this guy's tall, right?
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah. Do you think Klingons in that situation, do you think Worf is thinking, please don't hit me? You know, like, please don't hit me. I don't want to get hurt tonight. Huh. Or do you think he'd still try and fight him? But either
way, he's always up for a fight.
Yeah, that's true. Today is always a good day to die. But man, that was one tall, tall drink of water there. Wow. So, and again, Beren is asking Wrecker to kill Galen, so sure, why not? What do you think about Data trying to serve the Klingon blood wine? Here, you might like this. Have a little bit of blood wine. But what's he do? Of course. Pours it all over the ground. Yeah. Call housekeeping. Send him up here to clean the blood wine, please. You can't drink with your enemy, right?
Yeah, yeah. By the way, I mean, I'm a broken record here, but I enjoy Data being like out of his element on this particular part of his command mission, and seeing everyone kind of, you know, stepping around this relatively miserable Klingon. It's how did they exactly get into the? Did they get him into the observation room or the observation? You know, did they have to pull him there? Did they have to? Did they have to like entice him up there with promises of, I don't know, of clearly not blood wine, but something else? He didn't seem to be that enthusiastic to do anything.
No. No, I mean, what did they get, a 98-pound security officer to come in with a phaser and say, you will move?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think the only way you're going to get that person in the observation lounge is to beam him there.
I will.
Yes. Well, yeah, because he'd have no will at that point. I can't imagine him saying, oh, you want to continue looking at my ship while I just go ahead and leave? No, that's not going to happen. So they probably had to beam him there. So, Baran sure has a, you know, I thought when he said, what was it? They got a message from the Klingon saying he's been captured by the Federation. The Enterprise. So what's Baran say? Well, since he's got the artifact, I guess we're going to have to board the Enterprise and get it. Yeah. I heard that and I said, man, he's got a big set of balls, but there's no way he's going to be able to do it, right?
There's a weird thing when the captain does the... Well, he said, we're going to go on board the Enterprise. And then Picard does do you know how many security officers this place has? And he goes, no. Well, I mean, even though he says no, but Riker does, the fact that he says no, you know, he must know something, right? Because he's not going to board he wouldn't be able to board the Enterprise if it had like 50,000 security officers. So it was just a bit odd that he was so... you know, so bullish without the full information. But then again, right, you know, how helpful are security officers in the Federation, really.
Well, not really.
Not that much, right?
No, because Worf is in charge of them. That's why. Okay, let's be real. Even if they had one inept security officer on board, there's no way that this mercenary from what Worf would call a globfly is going to board the Galaxy-class starship and take what he wants. That's just not possible. It can't happen. All Data needs to do is, you know, put on one shield, just one. Don't put on two. We don't need to go use that much energy. Just the one, and the guy's going to do absolutely nothing. And since Riker's command code doesn't work anymore, but sure enough, there they go. They beam in. They catch everyone by surprise. And guess who's doing the shooting? That would be Picard. So,
well, no. Picard doesn't shoot. So Riker shoots.
Riker shoots. That's right.
Again, trying to project this onto what would happen in a real world situation. Do you think they had HR complaints about this? Crusher going, look, you know, Crusher reports into Riker as first officer, but he shot me. So yeah. I'm going to have to raise a grievance here.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I didn't sign up for this. Especially since him and I were doing the nasty trail thing a few seasons ago.
Well, that's probably another reason to take someone to HR as well.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. They just can't get used to those kind of changes. Oh, don't send me down that aisle now. Don't send me down that path again. So here we go. The Klingon is in the observation lounge. So what do? They go there. They go there. And there's Picard. And just when it looks like Riker is going to fire on Picard, he double crosses him, triple crosses. I don't know what's going on anymore. Double, triple, quadruple crosses, shoots Riker. They say he's dead. And then they beam out. After Riker shoots Beverly and Worf and the unknown security guy. But don't worry, Riker's fine, everybody. I was scared for a second, too.
No, I mean, you clearly weren't scared, right?
No.
In fact, it's a bit silly because they end up, Picard says, is he dead? And they go, yes.
Yeah.
Now, they didn't then need to have Troy say, actually, but Data, he's not dead. He's merely stunned. And then he sits up and goes,
ugh. Oh, what happened?
They didn't need... There's no reason for that extra line to be there. I mean, we all get it. You know, you're in on the trick here. He didn't kill Riker.
Uh-uh. No, of course not. No. So now we get back on the mercenary ship. And like I said, who's who in this story? Because the tables continually turn back and forth. When Picard doesn't want to do what T'Lara says, guess what, guys? He's a spy. He's actually Jean-Luc Picard of the Enterprise. And since Riker's of the Enterprise, too, but he's dead, he's a spy. Why didn't he go, well, guess what, guys? She's a Vulcan. She came here to...
Hang on, actually, we missed the bit when T'Lara actually went up to him and he goes, you know, who are you? Because you're not Galen. And at that point, I don't think he says anything. And then, you're going to tell me who you are or I'm going to shoot you. And then he kind of goes, well, yeah, I'm a bumper card. And it's like, oh, I knew it. And then everyone's happy then. I found that bit odd.
Yeah, that's why I said, how many T'Pols are there? But I guess I didn't go any further to say, yeah, she tells him she is T'Pol of Vulcan, and she's in search of these artifacts because it can build a weapon that can kill by thought. That's what I thought she said. She could hold this weapon, and she could think, kill him, and it does. Kill her, and it does. But that's not exactly right, as Picard found out, which maybe they didn't have enough time to really fully say, I think I figured this out. If you think happy thoughts, it can't hurt you. He got to that too quick, I thought.
Yeah. I think so.
And, of course, he's having to tell him, empty your head of negative thoughts. Worf, run away, quickly, because it's not possible. You know that's not possible.
That's one thing I was a bit surprised about, right? So if you do need to have, like, a peaceful and calm inside, I have two questions. First of all, why does this work on aliens? Is there any reason why whatever has been designed or whatever was found that works with Vulcans should work with other aliens? Because, you know, we might be very different, you know. Mm. If you went up and you tried to use it against a cow, would a cow's fear and anger be magnified and kill the cow? So it seemed to me that it was a little bit of a stretch that apparently you can use this on all aliens and it's all fine. But if you can use it on aliens, then it's pretty much good for all Klingons, right?
I would think
so. There aren't that many Klingons that can be that can go all Zen and, you know, and Jeez. Not succumb.
That was a word I was going to say, too. Exactly. What kind of Zen is going through his head right now for him not to get killed? And you said that. That is funny. Because, you know, by nature, Klingon, he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the mailman needs to have one of these weapons. Just hold it on him. And when a dog comes running after him, I don't want to kill the dog, but at least push him out of the way. All the way home. But, yeah, so that's what it does. So you're saying even a Vulcan who was angry and pissed off, it won't hurt? Because was she Vulcan?
Well, I don't know. No, all I'm saying is that I just don't understand how this is supposed to work and why it would immediately work for aliens. Because, you know, is it universal? Is the brainwaves universal that's supposed to allow someone to feel anger? You know, someone's anger, you know, one species' anger might be the other person's something else.
Yeah.
So it just seemed to me that it was a bit of a stretch that, well, first of all, it's a bit of a stretch that this thing exists. Secondly, it's a bit of a stretch that once they had no use for it, they decided to scatter it in various pieces around the Quadron so that someone might find time to go and look for it at some point. Thirdly, why would it work on aliens? And then fourthly, if it is going to work on aliens, then there's nothing a Klingon can do to avoid certain death. Because if it's going to work on anyone, it's going to work on the Klingon.
Oh, yeah, I guess it would. Why would it work that way, though? Huh. It just seems it's too easy. All she has to do is hold it there. Will it only fire if she thinks it to fire? Or will it always fire at anybody who's got bad thoughts? Why would they create such a thing?
Yeah, and you would have thought it's relatively easy to sidestep, right? So let's just assume that it does work and you can fire it at someone. If they've got internal bad thoughts, then, you know, they die. But you could then just go, okay, let me just think non-bad thoughts for a while. Like what the, you know, like what the crew did and what Picard did. It's not as if the Klingon can make his mind calm enough not to be killed by this, it's not a very big, important weapon, right? It's really not.
No, it wouldn't be. Okay, well, all right, anyway.
And I kind of, I'm a little disappointed that this is where we ended up, because I like the idea of them hunting something down, something mysterious, some, you know, even the idea of like ancient technology, I am not opposed to things like the, you know, the Iconians and stuff like that with their transporters or their portals. But the idea that you've got this, like, you know, MacGuffin that does this with brainwaves, they didn't really go into a technical explanation as to how it worked, and other than, or just magnifies it. Well, you know, how does it magnify it? Why is it special? Could you not just replicate 50 of them? You know, what's the physical process that's going on here that causes this to happen? That, you know, as they resolve this, it kind of left me a little bit unfulfilled, I should say.
Well, right. Yeah, well, I mean, this device makes no sense. But, okay, anyway. So Riker and Picard are back in the ship, and they're walking with Data. Everybody is back to normal where they should be, and it's time to go on with the mission. Or is it? I think maybe Data liked being captain too much, because technically Picard was declared dead, so therefore he's no longer the captain of the ship. Which Picard says, well, then again, think about it, is, you know, he's a renegade and facing 12 charges, which Riker gives his Riker smile to. But then, sure enough, uh-oh, wait a second, Data, he's joking. Is he really? No, Data, he's joking. And he walks him off camera to the brig. Oh, I wish we could have seen him throw him in the brig. That would have been better than just, you know, saying, Data, he's joking, Data, as he walks him away past the camera. Because then, having Data put him in the bridge, hit the button while this scared ensign's going, what the hell's going on here? And Data walks out the door, and Riker looks at him and says, are you going to get me out of here or not? Wouldn't that have been a nice way to end the show?
Okay, so is Data playing along with the game here, or is he really taking him to the brig, do you think?
I think he's really taking him to the brig.
Yeah, I kind of hope so as well.
But we don't see it, so is Data playing along, or is he really taking... That's why I say, then inside there we have Ensign Joey, who's at the control, watching Data bring the first officer, Data's boss, into the brig, put the force field on and start walking out the door, as this poor ensign's going, oh my god, what, you know, he's about to crap himself because he's like, what the hell is going on here? And then Riker turns to him and says, are you going to get me out of here or what? You know, I think that would have been a really cool ending. And then the camera fades away. Because you know that ensign's going to crap himself when he, you know, over what's going on here. So, okay. All right, well, I hope I didn't leave too much. Oh, Baron, he killed himself with his own device. How? Oh, Picard changed something. Okay.
Okay, so there are two things with that. If it's that easy to do it, then it's not a very effective weapon, right? Mm-hmm. So you should never introduce a system that's easy enough that someone can hack it, and then they can kill themselves. The other thing is that... So Picard phases the control unit, and it, you know, and he phases the control unit, and apparently everything is back to normal, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone is happy. But if all you need to do is destroy the control unit, then why did he need to destroy the control unit when he wasn't looking? You know, you don't have to kill him. You just have to destroy the control unit. So I would have expected the control unit to have, you know, short-circuited something and everyone to have died in the event that they try to destroy the control unit. Now, I know that in a chain of command, he tries to destroy the control unit and he says, oh, don't worry, I'll replicate another one, it's all fine. But yeah, I would have expected it there to be a bit more, you know, more security around that control unit.
You would think. I mean, did he have to get his hands on it, or did a computer do it?
And yeah, well, actually, I think he would have done it by computer, which makes it even worse. It's like, you know, hacking in via Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
The other thing I have to say that in the first episode, I wasn't particularly impressed by the main villain. I thought he was kind of like a weak villain. And, you know, he doesn't really have control. He doesn't have, you know, you're not looking at him as like a ruthless guy. Now, I do think that the Romulan perhaps would have been the better villain to have. So if the episode had transitioned over to actually she's running the thing in the background and she's really the one you need to be afraid of, which is kind of like where they end up, right? In the end, the climax is between Picard and the Romulan, not Picard and the captain. You know, that's shrugged off almost comedic-like. The problem is that you don't get any threat from the Romulan until way at the end, where basically it's mentioned in passing that, oh, you know, old Mr. Vulcan, sir, we've got, we're aware of your agent on that ship. And it's like, Oh, I'm sorry, Riker. We don't have any agent on that ship. Do, do, do. You know, there wasn't really a tip of the cap, or there wasn't she never really got the upper hand with Picard. She never, you know, she's never really kind of, you know, came in and took over and took charge. And at no point did I feel like the situation was lost, right? So neither the main captain nor the Romulan ones, you know, right at the end, she kind of takes over after a bit of jiggery-pokery. At no point did I fear that anyone was in danger because of them.
Mm.
And that's something that's always bad when you have a, you know, if you have a villain and you don't fear what they're doing, then you might as well not have a villain.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. All right, so I guess that brings us to the end of this episode, huh? Hmm. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Well, then, it's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. So, okay, so I got a feeling you went down in your rating.
Mm-hmm.
So let's do yours first.
Yeah, so I'm not really satisfied about how all of this ends, either from, you know, as you climax in the story, you need to kind of resolve it. You need to feel that there's a threat, and the villains don't provide that threat. That there are some nice comedic moments. It's a little bit of a romp around the galaxy, but at no point did I feel that the original captain was someone to be worried about. And you don't really get given enough time with the Romulan being, you know, the threat. You know, it gets introduced. You kind of feel that something's amiss here. And Picard kind of tries to outsmart her in the dying minutes of the episode. But it's not a proper confrontation. Now, you know, I don't need them to be punching each other or anything like that. But it just didn't feel like there was much going on. By the time they beam down and it turns out that there's a weapon that can kill you very slowly, you know, one by one, if you stand still enough, it doesn't sound like it's a super weapon. And again, you don't need to have a super weapon per se. It could have been something else. But I didn't feel like the stakes were particularly high. And basically, Picard is able to get out of those relatively limited stakes as it is by just looking at the back of the instructions that says, hey, if you don't want to die, don't think bad things. And
yeah. It
was really as simple as that. So, you know, it's a whole load of old nonsense that has some nice scenes in it, some nice comedy, but falls flat in terms of resolution. I'm going to be very generous, and I'm going to give it like a 3 out of 5 as a, you know, yeah. Actually, technically, my is 2 out of 5, but I always find this episode to be quite digestible. So you can watch it. It goes at a quite decent pace, right? There's always something going on. You know, you're going from A to B, from B to C, from C to D, and there's always there is stuff happening. At no point do you feel like I didn't feel like the episode dragged. So I think that's probably what saved it. I think the pacing probably saved it, even though it's slightly nonsense. So 3 out of 5 from me.
3 out of 5 for you. Okay, then. So my thoughts are a little less descriptive as yours were. I think it is better than the first. You thought it was worse than the first. It's interesting. You know, sometimes the buildup of part one is so good that, you know, let's give example, best of both worlds. And then part two falls flat. Best of both worlds, part two.
So best of both worlds, part two does not fall flat.
Not fall flat, but it's just not as good. So we gave, well, okay, we gave both a 5. Let's face it, they were both good. But for some reason, you know, sleep, Data, sleep. I was expecting more. But still, anyway, the point is, the first part with the fire, you know, that was pretty damn good. Second part, yeah. All right, it's okay. It's okay. But this time, part two, I think, delivers a better story than the first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who is who in the zoo? I think I used that once before. Who's who in the zoo? We don't know who's the good guy, who's the bad guy. We have a bad guy claiming to be a good guy, turns out to be a bad guy. And I think you've already said that. Good guy, bad guy, bad guy, good guy, good guy, playing bad guy, playing good guy, playing bad guy. We don't know who's who. To Lara or to Paul, who is she? They never answered that question either. They don't know who she is. I tend to think she might be Vulcan because she knew exactly where to go to find these pieces. Would a Romulan be able to do that? Maybe, you know, a Romulan spy on Vulcan, perhaps, gets a hold of this story and decides to put these pieces together. It would do the Romulan Empire a lot of good to develop a few more of these. But we still don't know. Baron gets killed by his own punishment device. Who could have saw that coming? Yeah, especially if all I gotta do is press this button.
Well, go ahead.
Okay, you challenged me. Dead. In the end, it's still not the best story. It's just, I think it could have, they both episodes could have been better. I'm sorry, but it is, this one is passable. Your last one, as I look, was a 4. Part 1 was a 4, part 2 was a 3. My first one, part 1 was a 2, part 2 is a 3. So in different, it's, I find it funny that in different ways we came up with the same grade. Yeah, that is, it is strange. I guess I'm more on emotion of what makes this a really good episode. Why was 1 a 4? Your interpretation was better than mine. On this one, you thought that it was a little worse. I thought it was a little better, but still, we came up with the same grade. I like that. That's funny. So,
well, I usually like it when I complain about it a lot, and I end up scoring it higher than you.
Yeah, I know.
It's, which has happened on occasion.
Yeah, yeah, it does. So, you know, in the first 5 episodes, I'm coming in at a 2.6. You're coming in at a 2.8.
That's not good. That's, surely I know. The season is better than a 2.8. Wow.
Liaisons. Interface.
Oh, yeah. And unfortunately, I think we go through a bit of a dry spell until we get to Parallels.
Oh, Parallels, Pegasus, yes.
Stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right there. You know, and then the Pegasus and Homeward. I don't really remember Homeward.
Yeah, it's not great.
Yeah. But so far, that's the only one we got Data Logan on for. So haven't heard from him in a very long time. So we'll see if he's even still around. But then right after that, that's when we really get the best one of all. Sub Rosa. God. Anyway. Because to thine own self, it sucks.
What? It does not. It absolutely does not. That is an awesome episode.
Sub Rosa or thine own self?
Thine own self.
Yeah, I was saying to thine own self. I was using a pun there. Sub Rosa sucks.
Okay.
But I really like
thine own self a lot.
Okay. A lot of these I don't really remember for some reason. So, I mean, like the Pegasus. I can't wait for the Pegasus. So, what else? Thine own self. Eye of the Beholder. Genesis.
So when we get to the Pegasus, by the way, are we going to watch the entirety of Star Trek Enterprise in the middle of the Pegasus?
No.
Are you following what I'm referencing there?
I don't think I am.
So the last episode of Star Trek Enterprise takes place with Riker and Troy in the Pegasus story.
The Pegasus is the cloaking device, right? The
cloaking device one, yeah.
What would TNG have to do, or the original series have to do with it?
So during the episode of the Pegasus, we find out at the end of Enterprise that during the time where Riker's basically wrestling with his conscience, he went down to the holodeck and... I mean, it only suggests that he watched the final episode of the Enterprise, but he might have watched the entire series of Enterprise.
I don't think so.
First to the end. And he had a bit of a think about what would Archer do in these circumstances.
So you think he had to watch 4 seasons of
Enterprise?
How did he do it in the few days that they were doing this mission? And it's amazing how everybody aged so much during the time that... to Enterprise. that was the saddest story ending I think ever. It made no sense. None at all. But whatever. Yeah, I could see Riker becoming the ship's chef for the last one or two episodes because he has this problem he has to do figure out. But
so we never see who the chef is, right?
No, we don't.
Again, given more and more light on the fact that, well, maybe it was Riker all along.
I have a hard time thinking that Riker is actually living a holodeck program of Captain Archer going up against the Bolians, not the Bolians, the
Andorians.
The Andorians, you know, as one of them keeps calling him Pink Skin. Somehow, none of that makes any sense that Riker would even have anything to do with the Andorians. One gets his antenna chopped off. No. It seems to me it was a bad ending to the show. They shouldn't have ended it that way. I could see Riker using the last couple episodes and then going on to one more episode of Enterprise and then ending it. But that to lead us to believe that the entire run of Enterprise was Riker on the holodeck watching how the earliest Starship Enterprise survived out in space. Especially when we think, why didn't he say, hey, why are the Borg in this episode? We never knew about the Borg until Q sent us to the Delta Quadrant. Why is the Borg here?
I have put next to each other the Jonathan Frakes from the Pegasus and the Jonathan Frakes from the These Are the Voyages. To be honest with you, I don't think it looks that bad. It's 12 years between them. And if that's how much I age in 12 years, I think he's doing well. I think he's doing fine. So I think there's always this criticism, right, that you know, the people are a lot older than they were in the original episode. I think Troy looks older.
They all do.
Of course they all do. But the issue about Riker, right, or Jonathan Frakes, is that he gets more grey and he gets more bald. And both of those things can be sorted out relatively easily.
Oh, well, of course. You know, that's another thing on the Delta Flyers. Frakes has actually come on and made, you know, given his two cents. Mm-hmm. And you could see the man has aged. I mean, he has aged a lot.
Was he like 65 now?
Yeah, probably. And, you know, they can make him look younger with a little bit of pancake, I suppose. But then, you know, they had Kate Mulgrew on. Not only... Okay, I'm probably going to open up a hornet's nest. But not only has Kate aged, she's gotten chunky. She's getting pretty big.
That's what a horrendous thing to say. Because, look, Riker has gotten chunky. You didn't say anything about Riker getting chunky.
Yeah, he has.
Data's got more chunky. You never brought that up before.
That's true. No, I did say it.
Paris has got chunky.
Yeah.
Why are you just... You're being quite sexist here.
That is true, yeah. No, because I even thought I said on Picard when it... You know, Data came onto the show that it didn't look like Data at all. I mean, there was so much aging process that why would Data have ever aged like that? Well, of course, even the makeup wasn't the same.
The makeup. And by the way, we should not allow it to go unnoted that both William Shatner and also Scotty also got quite chunky.
Oh yeah, yes, they did. They did. All right. Well, anyway.
But Bones never did. That's why they called him Bones.
That's right. She left him with his bones. That's all he got for out of the divorce. According to JJ movie, we still don't know why Kirk called him Bones in the original series, but whatever. Okay, guys, I guess that's it.
I think so. I think we should let people go.
Okay. So join us next time as we review episode 6 of season 7, and that is Phantasms. I know we're going to have one guest, but I'm not sure about the other. I haven't heard from him, so we're still looking into that. So everyone take care and good night.
Good night.
All right.